This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, I will be playing Devon Miller's Book Buzz number 16. It is so exciting. For over a year and almost a year and a half, Devon has been doing these wonderful book buzzes of for children's books, the books that you should not miss. And we will have his book buzz for April at the end of the at the bottom of the hour. But right now, I want to turn to an author whose book, she sent me her book, and I tell you, I was so impressed with it that I wanted to get her on the program as soon as I could, because this is a very important book. It's funny, sometimes a little book can have so much, there's so much in this book that is wonderful for you to learn about. It's not an easy book because the subject is very difficult. It's called The First Wrinkle, and it's by Wendy L. Samford, PhD. And I am so happy to welcome you to Joy on Paper, Wendy.
Thank you, Patsy. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, this, you know, as I said, this is a little book. But it is so, just the first, I'd say the first dozen pages, there's so much to learn from this book. I was so impressed with it. I'm so impressed with the work that you've been doing and how you came to writing. Because I you know, here on Joy on Paper, I'm always telling people, well, if you care about something, if there's, whether it's a family story, whether it's a story of something that happened in your life, write about it, and you certainly, you have done that. So tell us how you came to writing first in general, but this book called The First Wrinkle, it's quite an unusual approach, I think, that you've opened up a subject here about foster care that's very important for people to understand.
Yeah, well, my background is definitely education. I went into business when I was young, and then went into education, business education, in the high school level, and was pulled pretty quickly into central office business. I did that for about 13 years, and I felt very called to write a book on overtesting in the United States. So that was my first book. I quit my job. Not a sound financial decision. I want to add to that comment. I wouldn't recommend it. I have a very supportive husband, and then continued to write. I knew I wanted to write three books, and I did so. I wrote the first two, and then in between, we moved to Florida, the beautiful state of Florida, and I really wanted to get back in my career and make some money, and then I felt really called to write that third book, and so that was my first book. Blue Moor Planet was my first book on foster care, and after I finished that book, I proceeded to write The First Wrinkle and interview many people, not only people that grew up in foster care, but also in the alternating chapters of this book, I interviewed people that are working really hard to just save the system. There are angels out there that are just unbelievable what they're doing behind the scenes. I studied hard to write this book. But, wow, I learned more than anybody, I think, of what's going on, really, in our foster care system in the United States. This is not just about Florida. I was very careful to include people from all different states so that I was representing the entire foster care system.
Well, you know, foster care, now, I had a girlfriend who was in foster care, and I know that she was very blessed when the family that took her, who were neighbors of ours, finally took her. You know, she was She was their daughter from the minute I think she walked in the door, and she was my best friend from the minute I met her. And from that moment on, her life changed. I mean, she had a wonderful, wonderful life, but I know that she did go through several very, very rough years. And explain to us the situation. First of all, do you have the numbers of how many kids are in foster care?
I don't have the current ones. I have a chart in the book, but I think it's from 2 years ago. And interestingly, I watch a lot of WebExes. I'm a guardian ad litem. That's in one of the chapters. And so I watch a lot of WebExes through that wonderful volunteer program. And it's interesting that some of the WebExes I see is the numbers of foster care in Florida, especially around this area, are pretty high. They think that maybe that's because people don't have a support system. You know how a lot of people that move to Florida are transient, or they don't have a support system here, families. So that could be why it's higher here. Unfortunately, what I'm hearing after the pandemic is the numbers are kind of low right now, too stable, but that's because kids have been out of school. And the number one reporter of abuse are usually teachers, the education system, somebody in education, because, you know, teachers see kids every single day. I feel saddened that I feel the numbers are going to go up once, you know, the kids are all back in school and everything kind of calms down with the pandemic, that we're going to see these numbers go up, and that's very unfortunate. I'm so glad you brought up, though, the positive foster parents. I have a chapter in there on foster parents as well. And wow, what they do and what I see them doing and the people that I've come across being a guardian ad litem, these people, good people, are out there too. So I don't want to say that all foster parents are examples in this book. That is not true. There are beautiful people out there giving their time and their love and their energy and just opening their homes to kids that need them.
And unfortunately, with the number of people who are now using drugs, I think the number is going to grow, because when they are using drugs, everything in their life, everybody that they love goes on the back burner, because they cannot function. And so we have so many levels of things that we have to do to make, you know, the entire situation better. We have to address the people who are struggling and who don't know how to raise their children, and then the children land up in foster care. Now, what I really enjoyed reading about was when, as you said, you did a great deal of research. So tell us about how from the very beginning, the trauma affects the brain.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I started studying neuroscience many, many years ago when I wrote my dissertation a long time ago. At the time, and so I was really deterred from writing anything about it in my research. So when I decided to write this book, I really wanted to concentrate on that. This is just a fascinating field of people that have experienced trauma, especially childhood trauma. The impact that carries with you all through your life. And I give an example in the book at the beginning about this movie that I watched called Paper Tigers. And it really illustrates the fact that when you are in a situation, even if you smell something that brings you back to a trauma that you had in your past, or a situation at the grocery store, your brain goes into this fight, flight, or freeze mode almost instantaneously before you can even control what you're seeing. That Paper Tigers movie was so illustrative of kids, because it was saying you can't tell the difference between a paper tiger or a real tiger. And I think that's a really good illustration of what people go through immediately. When you learn to control that over time, therapy, yoga, art, whatever you use to control that first initial impulse, deep breathing, whatever it may be, if you don't control that first impulse, yourself in a fight situation, in a freeze situation, in a flight situation, any one of those are very common for people. when the situation isn't even real. It just triggered something from their past. So it's really sad. And if anything, I think this book, when I decided to write it, I really wanted it to be about non-judgment of people. I'm Christian, but no matter what I wanted to say was people are all just trying to do the best that they can, and we're all in different places in life. And especially people in this book, you can see how far they've come. And even if, you know, we're not where we're supposed to be yet, we've come a long way. And I really hope that people that read this say, yeah, I'm going to take a little step back and not judge that person right away, because I don't know where they've come from or what's happened to them in the past. So that's my hope.
Well, I think that, you know, as people are more and more aware of the problems, and as you said, people who open their hearts and their doors to help children who are in need. Because when we're dealing with such horrific events in our lives, you know, I can't even imagine what's happening to the children in Ukraine and what they're going through, the ideas and the thoughts that are going to be in their heads forever. And for our kids here in the States, if they've gone through a rough time in their families and they've had this horrific things happening to them, it takes a great deal of work on the part of the foster parents to deal with these situations, because it's an ongoing trauma that has to be dealt with.
Yeah, and it's true. I see firsthand the support foster child that I work with through the GAL program, that's the Guardian Ad Litem program. The support system that's in place for these foster parents, therapy and whatnot. Now, through the pandemic, the last 2 years, I've also seen no therapy happening just because the pandemic, you can't get to the kids. You know, everybody was shut down. And in the case of my girl, who is transferred around a lot for behavior reasons or whatever reasons come up, it's really, really hard on the kids. It's really heartbreaking, and finally she is in a great stable environment, and you know, it takes a very special person to be able to do that foster parenting. But you know what, Patsy, there's so many other things. I say in this book, if you can't, you know, do something that big in your life, you can volunteer. If you volunteer, then you're working. Maybe you have money. Give to one of these organizations that support these kids. So there's so many multiple ways to help. And if you can't do any of those, pray.
Exactly. Now, the title, The First Wrinkle, refers to what? Explain that to my listeners.
Yes, thank you. It's about the first wrinkle that's created in our brain, like I was talking about with trauma, that when you smell or there is a trigger that brings you back to a trauma that you've had. Our brain impulses, you never forget the first things that happened to you, your first anything that you learned, first time you went to the zoo. Now, that might be covered over by 30 visits to the zoo later, but in our brain, your neurons run through that first pass, that first wrinkle all the time. We just don't notice it unless you've had trauma. And then I describe it as it kind of gets stuck, and you have to learn to get past that and know this situation isn't happening. I am in this situation and I am safe. So I really liked that. Before I ever started writing the book, I knew that's what I wanted to call it. I have a really good example in this book of my mom being at the hospital. And I don't know if you read that part.
Yes, about the monster one. Yes, tell that story.
It's funny, but it's sad at the same time. But it's a really good illustration of how our brains work. And my mom was in the hospital, and she had horrible back surgery. Of course, she was heavily medicated, and that night was very rough. I stayed up with her, and she thought there was a monster behind the mirror that was at the end of her hospital bed. I could not talk her out of this, and I went over. I tried holding her. I tried pulling the mirror over to say there's nothing behind there. It went on and on and on. It was terrible. The next 2 days, of course, calmed down, but we left that 2 days later, and she wanted me to wheel her by that mirror and open it and just say, she said, I know there's not a monster behind that mirror, but I can't help but have it in my brain that it was there. I know it's not there now, but I think it was there. And I just think that our brains are so powerful like that to make something that, you know, we know consciously that there wasn't a monster there, but it was in her brain already. And that's just an example of that first wrinkle.
Well, you know, as Agatha Christie's Hercule Poirot always says, talks about his gray cells. And we really do have so many cells in our brain, and each of those cells does something. And those memories are there. And we have to, well, work around the bad ones and try to have more good ones. I mean, it's so funny. People will play Mozart for their children, you know, when they're pregnant. They'll play Mozart, which is absolutely a brilliant idea. But then when the child is born, sometimes they'll do things that really are not good for the child. And so if people would understand that you have all these gray cells and you have to decide what you're going to fill up your kids' gray cells with, all sorts of wonderful, beautiful memories, beautiful thoughts, beautiful things. You know, I feel sometimes I'm so lucky because I was raised so just with so much love and so sort of a free, a joyous nature surrounded me that that's affected me all my life. So I just wish people would read this book, understand where the trauma comes from, how the trauma can be dealt with. You have, you know, stories, as you said, also about the people who are giving so much of themselves to try to help others. I love this book. I think it's you know, it's there's a time where you have to sort of sit back and say, what can I really do? Where can, as you said, there are things that you can do. And I think if people will get this book, I'm very impressed with the stories, each of the stories that you've selected, telling the stories of the both the children and of the caregivers, are the great illustrations, and I think they will touch people's hearts because we really, I don't know, we have to do something. The system, I worry so much about the, you know, there's the people in the government, the people in charge. I know there are so many, they go into this. You don't go into this to make money. You have to have some kind of love and hope when you go into it. But I know that they do get burnt out just having to fight the system sometimes.
Yes. And I think that's so, wow, that is illustrated so well in the first responders and the case managers' stories in this book. That whole chapter was an eye-opener for me, let me tell you. In one of them, I chronicle 2 days in the life of a case manager, and I'll tell you what, it is unbelievable what these people do for the amount of money that they make. They have a high level of education, their hearts are gold, and the turnover rate is unbelievably high because there is just a lot of stress, no money, and not enough people that are in that job because of that. So, boy, if there's anybody that has influence over how much we're paying people in social services.
Well, we do. If there's anybody, we do. We as voters do. We have to be more active. If people are looking for a way to help, one of the things is to make sure that money is allocated properly, that money is not wasted. And I'm sorry, but there's so much in government that is just complete waste, and so much that is spent more on administrators than on the actual people who do the work. And I'm
absolutely.
It's you know, we have to look at ourselves, because if you're voting and you allow this to continue to happen, that's, you know, that's on us. I've been more active also in looking at where the money is going, because we are putting tons of money into these various, you know, areas of helping people. But unfortunately, the money's not getting to the right people.
No, I 100% agree with you. And it's funny because the older I get, the more I get involved in politics. And that is not a comfortable place for me to be. I shy away from that. I don't like center stage, but...
Well, I know, but...
We've
but,
got to get involved. We have got to be involved, even if it's writing letters or, you know, if you're shyer, stand back and start writing.
Or if it's somebody like you who really understands the situation. I mean, really, if you step forward, you understand what's happening. And I hope that perhaps this will motivate you to step forward, because we need people like you who understand from the cellular level, from the moment there's a cell in a kid's brain that's bad, how we can, you know, for one bad cell, if we can create a million good cells, so that everything else will be, all the bad stuff will be forgotten. But we need somebody like you. And I think this book is wonderful. It's a great book. You know, and it's an important book. So I'm just so happy that you came on Joy on Paper today. I want to, you know, make sure that I will be talking about this. I'm starting to attend more writers' events, more readers' events, and just also not political events, but events where there are parents meeting, because I was a homeschool mom for 20 years. So I'm getting more involved in speaking to homeschool parents, because they also have to understand, you know, the importance of what you've written here about the entire idea of this first wrinkle. It's a great title, and I hope people sort of hone in on it, that we need to make sure from the day a kid is born, if I would hate to walk in a prison and just analyze all of them, because they are so filled with so many, many bad things in their brains. And we're not addressing these things. We're not addressing these.
No,
and we should be addressing them from day one. And so I hope that, you know, people will get out, reach out and get this book. And you have a lot of suggestions here, as you said, of things to do. But you do have a website you want people to go to?
Oh, I do. Thank you so much. It's www.wsamford.com. And that's Sam, like a guy's name, and then a car, Ford.
Sam
that's
Ford.
That's the way it's spelled.
Yeah, I like that. Sam Ford. So, you know, again, Wendy, it's great that you came on the program today. And I will, as I said, continue to promote this book. And people, really, this is a wonderful book to read. It's filled with love. I can feel the love that came to you as you were writing this book. So again, Wendy Samford, I'm so happy that you were on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you for having me, Patsy. It was really nice talking to you.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye. Okay. We'll have a book buzz, and then we'll come back in a little while with my next guest.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Tock Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. Spring is here, and that means you'll hear the sounds of birds chirping, the sounds of bees buzzing, and the possible sound of a rockin' guitar shred? This past March, international music star Kevin Jonas of the Jonas Brothers, alongside his wife Danielle Jonas, released their first ever children's book called There's a Rock Concert in My Bedroom. The book was illustrated by Courtney Dawson. Appearing on Good Morning America to talk about the book, Kevin and Danielle said they've always wanted to write a children's book. The book is about Emma, who loves music. She loves a good bass beat, she loves to dance, she loves to rock with her family, and she loves to strum her guitar. She decides that she wants to show off her talents at the school talent show. But when she hears the talents of other students, she starts to get stage fright. It's then up to her family to show her the fun of performing and also show that she's already a star. This book is all about the joy of music, The Power of Family, and Facing Your Fears. This book has become a number one bestseller in children's performing arts fiction and children's self-esteem on Amazon. It's also in the bestseller list for children's family life on Amazon as well. There's a Rock Concert in My Bedroom was inspired by Kevin and Danielle's daughters when they realized their nerves would kick in for events such as dance recitals and school performances. For them, this book was to remind their daughters that it's all about having fun. And I know readers will have so much fun when they read this book. I know for me, I had a rockin' good time. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest. And with one of my favorite books of all time, not just of the year. I love this book. And I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Susan Tyler Hitchcock, who has brought us a book called Into the Forest, The Secret Language of Trees. Of course, it is a Nat Geo book. And when you get a Nat Geo book, you know you have a great book. Hi, Susan.
Hey, Patsy. Good to talk with you.
Wow. You know, I love this book so much. I've spent so much time. You know, I am a child of the forest. I ran wild my entire childhood through the forest. I am from Michigan's northern peninsula, the Upper Peninsula, and I was, that's it. That was my life. My father was a lumberman, actually. Early on, one of the ones who really was a conservationist more than a lumberman. That's what he cared about. When he came back from World War II, he cared about making sure that we had wonderful, wonderful timber in the northern Michigan area, that we wouldn't lose all of the forest there. So I was really a wild child in the forest. So this book, and my favorite sound in the world is a birch tree in the wind.
Oh, well, you know, I'm a Michigander as well. I'm from Ann Arbor, so I'm from way far
south
of Michigan from the, compared to where you're from, but I was a child of the forest as well. I grew up, my parents built a house right on the edge of woods, which are now, I am afraid, not even there anymore, but I would just wander in the woods every day after school. That was what made me happy, and I'm now learning more about why that was the case, but it, who knows? I mean, you don't even need to know why in order to take a walk in the woods and enjoy it.
Well, to me, one of the worst words in the world, a word that gives me chills, is to hear the word biomass. When I first heard about what they are doing and how they are stripping and using trees for... I can't deal with it. So I really am so happy that you've written this book, because I hope that people will get it and just marvel at the joy of trees and do more to preserve them.
Indeed. You know, I learned in my research for this book that there was a pair of botanists in 1999 who proposed the term plant blindness, talking about how we give our children stuffed animals, we take them to zoos, we encourage them to care about the animals in our world, but at the same time, we're not even paying attention to the plants. There's kind of an epidemic of plant blindness in our culture, and I realized that even I had an experience of tree blindness, that awareness that you're talking about of having grown up in the woods, I never really thought as much about it as I was doing as I wrote this book about how much trees have been a part of my life. I love thinking about the special trees in my life. One of my favorites is a holly tree. When my son was about 8 years old, he went off into the forest and brought back in a bucket a foot tall wild holly tree and put it in his bedroom and said that was his Christmas tree. And after the season, we planted it, and it's now taller than he is. You know, I think everybody has a few favorite trees, and maybe you can use that as a way to realize how important trees have been in one's own life and as you say, Patsy, to the planet as well. Trees really do keep our planet alive. A lot of people call the rainforest the lungs of the planet because of the importance of their respiration, the way that they are part of the circulation of moisture and temperature on our planet and in our atmosphere. They're essential to the health of the planet and to our own health as well.
Well, I have so many trees in my life that are important, and one of them, it's funny, I live in a lovely area, and to get to the studio, every time I drive to the studio, I go through this area where it's a golf course, and along the golf course, just before the golf course, there is this banyan tree. I can't stop myself. Every time I pass it, I just slow down. I don't care about the traffic behind me, and I just have to marvel at it, because I think banyan trees are so amazing, and for the owners of the property have not chopped it down like so many people do. They've let it grow, and it gets more beautiful every year. And I just, if anyone has not stood in front of a banyan tree, they really have to just search for one, because it's a marvel, isn't it?
It is indeed. I actually even wrote a short chapter about the banyan tree, and one of the ways that I find it expressing itself in human civilization, I think it's so interesting. If you look in the mythologies from around the world, culture after culture has a sacred tree at the heart of their story of life and the universe. But in the Hindu tradition, in the Bhagavad Gita, instead of the tree roots going down into the ground and the branches going up, the holy tree, which is a banyan tree, has the branches going down into the earth and the roots going up to the divine sky. And I think that has to do with the fact that they were inspired by all the banyan trees that spread by their branches dropping back down and becoming roots, spread out bigger and bigger.
Well, I'm writing a book set in 1875 in India, and there they write, you know, the stories about the banyan tree that was enormous. I mean, they could hide an army of 300 people in the banyan tree. That's how large the banyan tree in Baroda, India was. And they still have in India these enormous, enormous trees where you really literally can get lost within them.
One of the features in my book, I found about a dozen trees that I call famous trees, and one of them is called Timama Maramu. It's a tree in India, and supposedly a few centuries ago, a woman died there, and her husband, in grieving, kept coming back again and again to that banyan tree, and so it still to this day represents the partnership and devotion of lovers and spouses and people who wish to find their true love come to Timama Maramu. That tree is estimated to be about 5 acres big.
Oh, it's beautiful. I've seen pictures of it. Well, here too, that you've written about it and make people aware of the magnificence of trees and how important they are. It's just, I can't, for me, as I said, my entire life was lived in the forest. I had a hammock that was between two birch trees. And I must, mm-hmm. That's where I read. I started reading when I was 3 years old, and I used to just be in that hammock and reading and reading and reading. And so it's wonderful that you've gotten up, of course, with Nat Geo, you have all these beautiful, beautiful photographs. One of them, of course, is the mangrove. And here mm-hmm. in Florida, we get the opportunity of seeing wonderful mangrove trees.
The mangroves are amazing trees, and they really do protect the coastlines everywhere. There's really interesting stories and experiences where mangroves were destroyed in order to allow development, and the coastlines lose life and also sturdiness. Mangroves really are keeping the coastline alive and solid, and they also end up being nurseries for all sorts of fish, especially the coral reef fish. The little tiny fish come to life in among the roots of the mangrove that go down into the water, and then ultimately the mature fish go to the coral reefs and populate those beautiful places that are also endangered these days as well.
Well, anybody who comes to Florida has to go kayaking among the mangroves, and it just takes your breath away when you look at them.
Beautiful. That's beautiful.
So yeah. One of the things that you write about here is the banking of seeds. What does that mean, and what are people doing to preserve seeds?
Yeah, so that is an international effort to be sure that even as industrial agriculture focuses on very specific seeds for crops and seeds that have been genetically engineered in order to be abundant in producing the kind of food that we want, the seed banks are repositories of seeds, the old seeds, the ancient open-pollinated seeds that will continue to propagate because genetically engineered seeds, most of them do not, you can't grow a stalk of corn from a genetically engineered seed and then take those seeds from the cob of corn and plant them again. You have to buy them instead from the company that did the genetic engineering. But the seed banks are an international effort to keep and preserve in cold and underground seeds that really will continue to propagate and feed us and provide us with green growing representatives of all sorts of species. The interesting thing is that the seed banks, and particularly one that's in Svalbard, way up in the Arctic Circle and deep underground, that one was not really paying attention to trees. It was looking at agricultural crops, actually, until the last couple of decades when people there and also at Kew Gardens in London began to realize that tree seeds needed to be saved as well. And so these are repositories of the great most natural seeds from around the world that are keeping them in safety so that if there are instances where we've lost trees and green things because of deforestation, because of climate change, because of development, and we actually have the seeds to propagate and to replenish nature with its kind.
The subject of genetically altering seeds is something that sometimes it gives me the chills, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, well, all the more reason, you know, one of the things I did learn along the way, we hear about tree planting as an effort to counter the losses that we're facing and recognizing right now. And planting trees is so, so important. There are amazing efforts around the world and have been for the last 20 years to replant. But one thing I've learned, including from Suzanne Simard, who was kind enough to write the foreword to my book and is the author of the bestseller, Finding the Mother Tree, one thing I've learned is that it's good to replant, it's good to plant new trees, but in fact, the old forests need our help as well. We need to preserve all the old forests, and this is from the rainforests of the tropics up to the forests, you know, edging along the Arctic Circle. Those are the ones that are doing the work that the planet needs to cool, to hold the carbon, and to replenish the atmosphere in a way that keeps not only us humans and all animal life, but also the planet healthy.
Well, you know, I homeschooled my boys, and I would say we did about 50% of our homeschooling in the botanical gardens. Mm-hmm. That's where we went, because I wanted them to have that feeling that I did. Now, of course, we were here in Florida, but in the botanical garden, we could be in a forest. We could be around trees, and that sound. There's nothing like the sound of trees. I wish people would just take themselves more into the forest, into botanical gardens, and just sit back, and the sound of wind going through the trees will calm you more than anything else.
You know, the other thing that calms you as you go into a forest or into a park, or even honestly to have a few plants in your home, the volatiles, that is the chemical essences that that trees exude, have been found to be calming as well. They actually have chemical properties that are closely related to the active ingredients and antidepressants. There are so many studies by psychologists, by educators, by urban planners that have found how much people live happier, safer lives, how much children learn better, they concentrate, they're more creative. All of those things are effects on having greenery, whether it's a few trees or a whole forest, in view and as part of their daily life. There are even amazing studies that I find so interesting. One, a prison in Michigan, actually, and one, a hospital in Pennsylvania, where they were comparing the health of prisoners or recovering hospital patients, whether they were looking out the window at, in the case of the prison, comparing looking out at prison yard versus looking out at a field, and in the case of a hospital, looking out at another wall as compared to trees and a park. And in both cases, in the prison, there were fewer calls, claims to be sick among those who looked out at green. And in the hospital, people got better more quickly when they were able to look out at a park and the trees out their window. So, you know, it's just all over and over we find that if we can find a way to have a life that is in some way or other among the trees, it's going to be a better life.
It will be, because I know that when I was lucky enough to be in a school, when I was in school, we had windows and we could look out at the trees. And I even today, when I think of those wonderful days when I was in school, that I could look out there, and sometimes I was just really dreaming, and I was alive. I was so happy. And recently they built a school here, a brand new school, spent a couple million dollars, a high school here, absolutely, you know, a big project. And they built this school with tiny little slit windows. You know, the kids can't see out of those windows. Those windows don't open. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's like being in prison. So that's why you want to have, I really think you're right. And what you write here, that if people have trees, whether they're in the hospital, and I think, you know, with prisoners, part of why they probably go absolutely mad is that you don't see anything green. You don't have any trees. You don't have that smell. You don't have that smell that comes from being with trees.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not only the volatiles, that is the sort of the chemical essence in the air, but the soil also has chemical components, and they're beginning to discover the health benefits of smelling the soil of the forest.
I'm sure it's there. I know for me, it's the trees mean everything to me. I would not be the person I am today. Well, for two reasons. I am because of the trees, and I am because of Nat Geo. I want always to thank Nat Geo every time I get one of their books, because when I was a kid, as I said, you know, living out as I was in really the middle of nowhere most of the time, I had the one thing that we got in my family. We got the Nat Geo magazines. And those yellow magazines, when we got them, it was a joy, a sunshine that filled our lives. In the summer, we enjoyed reading them outside. In the winter, laying on the floor with a blizzard outside, we didn't care because we were in a Nat Geo book. And that's why I hope people will get this book. All Nat Geo books are beautiful. This one is particularly great. And Susan Tyler Hitchcock has written this book. It's called Into the Forest, The Secret Language of Trees. And you're right, Suzanne Simard gave a beautiful, beautiful introduction to you. And I'm going to contact her. I hope she'll come on Joy on Paper. I would love to talk to her. Susan?
Yeah, she's done quite amazing work to discover that trees actually care for one another. And we're not talking metaphorically. We're talking physically. They help each other in the midst of the forest.
Well, Susan, I will contact her, and I want to thank you so much for this book. Is there a website you want to send people to?
No, not really.
They could just go to Nat Geo. Everybody should go to Nat Geo. National Geographic has one of the best websites in the world. It is so wonderful. It's a place you can get lost, but you can order this book. Of course, it's available online. The paper, just the paper alone, the beautiful photography, all of the things that you've written. It is one of the best books I've had, you know, from Nat Geo. I get so many books, but I love this book. It is a treasure to me, a perfect gift, a really perfect gift for anyone. We have Mother's Day coming up and Father's Day coming up. It is a great book as a gift and a book that people will treasure.
Patsy, you're so kind to say that. Thank you.
Well, you did a great job. Again, thank you. Thank you so much. I get so thrilled with this book. Susan Tyler Hitchcock, you've given me already hours and hours of joy, and I know many more hours of joy as I go through each of these beautiful, beautiful stories and photographs. Thank you so much.
Such a pleasure to talk with you.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Oh, people. Go to the, if you're here, if you're in my area, head yourself over to the Botanical Gardens in Largo. They are beautiful. And read among the trees. This time has gone very quickly today because I was very happy to be able to talk about foster care. Again, we're talking about foster care and about the brain, what's in your brain. And I want to thank also Wendy Samford for coming on Joy on Paper today. A little bit at the last minute, but I wanted to make sure because foster care awareness is coming up and I wanted to have her on. Well, you know, I think I'm going to head today to the Botanical Gardens to be among the trees. I want to thank everyone for all of their wonderful, wonderful emails I've been getting about the 7th anniversary of Joy on Paper. Thank you so much. I know that everybody loved Tasha Alexander and Andrew Grant, who were here with me to hand out the Patsy Awards, which I'm so thrilled that we were able to do that this year. And remember, I'm going to be every book now I read, I will be thinking about, are they going to be winners for the next Patsy Award next year? And I just want to thank you for your input. Anyway, the time's up. I want to say, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear those magical words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry, who book number 12 in her Witch City Mysteries is coming out on April 26th. I'm counting down the days because she's going to be here in the studio and we are going to talk about this latest book because we have a wedding and everybody loves a wedding, especially in a cozy mystery. All right, there's going to be a body or two, but what the heck? It's going to be fun. So I'm looking forward to having Carol J. Perry here in the studio with me. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Oh, Ed, I'm really grateful to you, and it was wonderful. 7 years we've been together. My goodness, it's a long time. Okay, everybody, bye-bye now.